Next up, we have Catherine Hollander and Josh Rosenberg from GiveWell. Catherine graduated from Yale University with a BA in history. She's worked as a journalist covering economics and healthcare for National Journal. And she's also worked as an editorial director for Beacon, an independent funding platform for journalism. She joined GiveWell in May 2015. And Josh is a senior research analyst at GiveWell. He works on a variety of GiveWell research projects, including assessing the evidence base for programs, reviewing charities, and investigating GiveWell incubation grants. So Josh and Catherine are going to discuss GiveWell's latest research on top charities, promising interventions, and the GiveWell incubation grants program to grow the pipeline of potential future top charities. Take it away, Catherine and Josh.
All right, so I am Catherine Hollander, a research analyst with a focus on outreach at GiveWell. And this talk is really going to focus on updates on GiveWell's research. I'm going to provide a very quick overview at the beginning of the talk about what GiveWell is and what we do. And as Helen mentioned, we'll have about 20 minutes for questions at the end. So if you are new to GiveWell, that is awesome, and we're really glad that you're here. Please feel free to ask any questions just about what our mission is, what our goals are, and how we operate, since this talk will be pretty research-oriented. So just to start out with the overview of GiveWell, GiveWell is a nonprofit dedicated to finding outstanding giving opportunities and publishing the full details of our analysis to help donors decide where to give. And so what that means in practice is that each year on our website, we publish a list of recommended charities that we believe represent some of the best opportunities for donors interested in having an impact to give to. And so GiveWell, we ourselves are focused on charities that operate in global health and development, and I'm happy to talk more about that. We're very focused on transparency. It's very important to us to share the full details of our research with our donors and our analysis and to make the case for why we believe that the charities that we recommend are the best giving opportunities that we can recommend for donors who are interested in following our research. And finally, GiveWell itself is an independently funded nonprofit, which means that we don't take a percentage of the donations that go to our top charities. We ourselves are funded by donors who support GiveWell's operations. So we have currently a list of 7 top charities. We published this list at the end of 2016. We generally refresh our top charities list just in advance of giving season each year, which is December, toward the end of the year. And so we are currently following the work of these 7 groups. 3 of them were new in 2016, so if you've been following GiveWell for a while, you might be fairly familiar with some of the names: the Against Malaria Foundation, the Schistosomiasis Control Initiative, the Deworm the World Initiative, and GiveDirectly. Those 4 have been on our list for a number of years. And then at the end of last year, we added 3 new charities: the End Fund for their deworming program, Site Savers also for their deworming program. So we currently have 4 top charities that focus on deworming, and Josh is going to talk a bit about some of the research that we're doing into deworming this year as a program. And then we also added a charity called Malaria Consortium for their seasonal malaria chemo prevention program. And seasonal malaria chemo prevention, or SMC, just to make it a bit easier, is a program to distribute preventive anti-malarial drugs to children during the peak malaria transmission season. So those are the 7 top charities that we're currently following. We are also interested through a newer program as part of our work that we call GiveWell Incubation Grants in growing the pipeline of potential future top charities. And so what this means is that GiveWell is very focused on recommending charities that are strongly evidence-backed, where they have a track record that we can look at and assess, and that we can feel confident in recommending their work. And so what this typically means is that by the time GiveWell is making a top charity recommendation of an organization, it's been around for a while. It's probably been funded by someone else earlier in its development to scale up to the point where GiveWell feels that, you know, it has a track record that we can look at. And so We were wondering a few years ago whether we might be able to help develop additional new top charities by getting involved earlier in the process as a funder for promising organizations. So that's actually just one element of what the GiveWell Incubation Grants Program has become, this support for charities early in their development that we think with additional resources might potentially scale to become GiveWell top charities down the line. The second element of this work is research that we're doing to fund research into promising programs, which Josh is going to speak about in his part of the presentation. And then the third piece of this work is on monitoring and evaluation. So GiveWell is very interested in charities that have strong monitoring. We want to know whether they are effectively reaching the people that they are intending to reach with the programs that they're implementing. And that requires typically quite intensive monitoring to make the case to GiveWell. And so often this monitoring is quite expensive and can be challenging to do or doesn't exist, and that can be the obstacle to GiveWell recommending something. And so as part of our incubation grants program, we're interested in seeing whether we might be able to fund monitoring conducted by third-party organizations of programs that we consider promising or of charities that we consider promising, where that might have been the obstacle in the past to GiveWell being able to assess their work as a potential top charity. So in that first category of incubation grants that I mentioned, scaling up potential top charities, there are two potential top charities that we've supported through the incubation grants program that we think may potentially be contenders in 2017. So when we make that year-end update to our list of top charities, these groups might potentially be on it. We're looking at them actively now. One group that's in this category is a group called Zusha. They implement a road safety program in East Africa where they are putting basically bumper stickers on the inside of public service vehicles that encourage passengers to speak up if their driver is driving unsafely. And they've completed two randomized control trials of their program that have shown a promising reduction in insurance claims for vehicles that were in the treatment group, suggesting that this might be an effective way at reducing traffic accidents and thus the death and disability that is associated with those. So Zusha is one promising group that we're looking into this year. Another is a group called No Lean Season. No Lean Season is run by Evidence Action, which is the parent organization of the Deworm the World Initiative, which is one of the groups that's been on our top charity list for a number of years. No Lean Season grew out of Evidence Action's beta program, where they're scaling up promising programs. And it is a program that currently operates in Bangladesh and incentivizes low-income agricultural workers to temporarily migrate from rural areas to urban areas during the agricultural lean season. And a number of studies have been conducted of this program that have shown promising benefits to consumption for households of individuals that participate in this program. And there's also been some promising evidence that shows that people who received the incentives through this program to migrate, re-migrate without the incentive in a subsequent year. And so we're interested in these two as potential 2017 top charities and are actively investigating their work with an eye toward our end of year update. These are additional groups that we've made incubation grants to that we are not thinking that we are likely to assess for a recommendation at the end of this year, but that we're actively following and think, you know, we might be looking at in 2018, 2019, or 2020 for a potential recommendation. And just quickly what they do, and we're happy to talk about any of these in the Q&A with more detail. Charity Science Health is an organization that actually grew out of the EA community. You may be familiar with it. I know Will mentioned Charity Science in a talk earlier today. They are implementing a program to do SMS reminders or text reminders for immunization in India. So we're following that program. Results for Development is a group that we are funding to scale up pneumonia treatment for children in Tanzania. And New Incentives is an organization that we are currently funding for work that they're doing on a pilot program to use conditional cash transfers to incentivize routine childhood immunizations in Nigeria, and more. So there are additional organizations as well that we're looking at. Then on the monitoring and evaluation side, so I mentioned that another thing that we're interested in is whether we might be able to fund the creation of better monitoring information such that we can assess programs where we maybe previously either had questions about their monitoring or where the monitoring wasn't sufficient for us to feel that we could make a recommendation. One of the things that we're doing is actually a project, and these all of these projects are occurring with an organization that we are partnering on as part of our incubation grants program called ID Insight. And they're an international NGO that focuses on helping their clients improve their social impact. And something really cool that they can do is really come in and work with GiveWell, which we're an organization that really focuses on thoroughly investigating the literature for programs and thoroughly investigating charities work. And they can help come in and work with us to do some of the on-the-ground type of research that kind of helps us fill in the picture. And so in this case, they're helping us with some monitoring questions that we have. And one of the projects that we're working on with ID Insight is a project to better understand the monitoring of the Against Malaria Foundation. The Against Malaria Foundation has been a GiveWell top charity for a number of years. It's currently our top recommendation for donors to give to the Against Malaria Foundation of the 7 charities that we recommend. And last year, we discovered that we had some questions about their monitoring. We didn't realize that we had had in the past, but we were looking at their monitoring and realized that there were some aspects of the way that they were doing it that we weren't sure about. And so ID Insight is working with us and with the Against Malaria Foundation to better understand how they're doing their current monitoring and to potentially work with them to improve their monitoring. The second project that we're working on with ID Insight relates to surgery charities. So GiveWell has not recommended charities that focus on providing surgeries in the past. And there have been 2 primary reasons for that. One is that we are unsure about what we call the charity's room for more funding, which is the question of whether additional dollars will cause additional surgeries to happen, or that there might be something else going on that's the bottleneck to additional surgery. So the surgery example, one potential bottleneck would be that there is a lack of availability of surgeons. And so just putting additional dollars toward the program might not be the thing that causes more of it to happen. And then the other question for surgery charities that we've had is on monitoring. I've just talked a lot about monitoring. It's very important to GiveWell. And for surgery charities, high-quality monitoring feels particularly important because we think that the outcomes of surgery might be particularly likely to be varied. So it could vary with the quality of the surgeon or the patient or their needs for long-term follow-up. And so we really want to see very high-quality monitoring of surgical outcomes if we were to recommend a surgery charity. And we hadn't yet identified surgery charities that were focused on programs that we were interested in where we felt that we had seen that type of monitoring. And so 2 of the types of surgery that we think are promising as potentially low-cost ways to really improve quality of life are cataract surgery and surgery to treat obstetric fistula. And a fistula, if you're not familiar with it, is a hole that forms between a woman's vagina and bladder or rectum that is often the result of prolonged obstructed labor. And urine or feces will leak through the hole, and our impression is that it can cause significant impact on quality of life and is often treatable with surgery. So with ID Insight, we're working on projects in both of these areas, first with cataract surgery to identify an organization that ID Insight can work with to build a monitoring system in partnership with that organization such that, we will have that high-quality monitoring data. It won't be this year, but a few years down the line so that we can assess cataract surgery charities as a potential GiveWell recommendation. And then with fistula surgery, we actually are initially starting on a project with ID Insight that focuses on understanding the cost effectiveness of fistula treatment programs. And so ID Insight is going to dive deeply into one organization's costs of their program and help us really understand that cost effectiveness. And then if it looks competitive with our current priority programs, then we'll move forward with a similar monitoring project as we have with cataract surgery. And then finally, ID Insight is working with us to conduct a randomized control trial of the program that New Incentives is implementing. I mentioned New Incentives on the previous slide as a charity that we've supported with an incubation grant. They're currently working on a pilot program to incentivize routine childhood immunizations. And randomized control trials for GiveWell are one of the very best ways that we can tell whether a program is, or, you know, that inform our view on whether a program is having impact. They're also quite expensive and challenging to run. And so we're working with ID Insight to run a randomized control trial of new incentives to help us better assess their program. And, you know, hopefully figure out whether down the line it might be a good fit for a GiveWell recommendation. And so I'm going to turn this over to Josh now to talk more about the intervention research that we are doing and funding through GiveWell incubation grants.
Great. Thanks. So as Catherine mentioned, I want to talk a little bit about the third piece of GiveWell incubation grants, which is funding research. So I want to talk through a few research projects. So the first one is a project that we're doing with the Center for Effective Global Action, or CEGA, which is based at UC Berkeley. I think there's some folks from CEGA here this weekend. And basically what this project is doing is looking at the long-term effects of interventions. So what GiveWell is trying to do is find the most effective and cost-effective programs. And oftentimes what that requires is understanding what the long-term impacts of programs are. But there's actually very little information from high-quality randomized control trials or other studies that can tell us the long-term effects of many programs. So, for example, with education, you know, what you're trying to do is deliver perhaps an additional year of schooling and hoping that that leads to much greater income later on. But there are very few randomized control trials that follow up, you know, 10 years later to see what the impacts of those programs are. And so we're trying to help fill this gap with this project with CEGA. And so basically what this project is providing money for CEGA to hire postdoctoral students in economics to search through completed randomized control trials that were done 10 or more years ago to see whether you could follow up on the treatment and control groups and see what actually happened in their lives many years later. And so CEGA is going to look into a wide variety of areas systematically. So the areas that I have listed here, you know, child health, nutrition, education, family planning are all areas that I think would benefit from more evidence around the long-term effects of programs. And so I think one advantage of this approach is that you don't have to wait 10 to 15 years to get results and learn about the impact of these programs. And it also might be substantially cheaper than doing a new randomized control trial where you have to set something up and run an intervention and then follow up many years later. I think a potential disadvantage of this approach is that it may be very logistically challenging to follow up on these cohorts that, you know, were studied 10 or more years ago and actually find the people now to learn about what happened to them. We're not sure whether we're actually going to be able to find studies in this area, but CEGA is optimistic, and we talked to a number of experts in the area who thought that this might be possible, and so we thought it was, you know, a potential high upside project that was worth pursuing. So the next research project I want to talk about is related to deworming and is also a bit related to the CEGA project. So deworming is a really important program for GiveWell because, as Catherine mentioned, 4 of our 7 top charities do deworming. But the evidence base is quite limited. So you may have heard of the Worm Wars. It's quite famous because different academics have different views of whether or not deworming is an effective intervention. And the reason for this is that really, to a substantial extent, our view of the effectiveness of deworming relies on one randomized control trial called Miguel and Kramer 2004 that was done in Kenya. And so we are looking into what we could do to expand this evidence base because the research is relatively limited, but we still believe that in expected value terms, deworming could be very cost effective. You know, even if you discount substantially the potential for an effect, it still looks to be an extremely cost effective program, which is a major reason why we recommend it. So we think that any additional evidence could substantially update us. You know, we expect to, in the absence of more information, direct substantial amounts of funding to deworming in the future. But new information could, you know, change how much we decide to allocate. So we're looking into a couple of projects here. And donors have been interested in this for a long time because they hear about the Worm Wars and hear us describe the limitations in the deworming evidence base. And they were wondering what more we could do. So, you know, a couple of ideas that we've had and that we are funding through the GiveWell incubation grants work. The first one is similar to the CEGO work, looking for deworming trials that were run 10 or more years ago and seeing whether you can follow up now and see whether it has similar effects on earnings as were found in that Miguel and Kramer study. And then the second project that we're looking at is, or that we've actually funded, is a 20-year follow-up to the Magellan-Kramer study. So it's just a longer-term follow-up to see whether the effects seem to persist for that length of time. And so in the case of the follow-up to another trial, that's another case where we're not sure whether it will be feasible, but it has so much high potential value that we thought it was worth exploring more. And then finally, I want to talk about the GiveWell Incubation Grants project to look at moral trade-offs. So basically, whenever a donor decides to give money to a particular charity, they're either implicitly or explicitly saying that they value what that charity works on, and that they value it, you know, more than the potential value that a different charity could bring. So these are sort of challenging and subjective questions that you have to face about, do you value more averting the death of children or reducing poverty, and kind of to what degree? And that affects whether you should give to the Against Malaria Foundation, which distributes insecticide-treated bed nets to reduce child death, among other effects, or give directly, which is, you know, reducing poverty by giving cash transfers. And so this is a really important question that any donor has to face when they're making a donation decision. And there's very limited information to help a donor make that decision. So the few things that we do now, which I think is an imperfect process due to the lack of information, are first we ask our staff to value these outcomes relative to each other and put that into our cost-effectiveness analysis to think about, you know, what that implies about which charities are most cost-effective. Second, we try to compare to what does exist from either governments or the World Health Organization. You know, other actors are making similar sort of resource allocation decisions. And so we look at what tools they use, although they haven't done a lot of, you know, deep analysis of these kinds of questions. And then finally, we publish our cost effectiveness analysis online so that any donor can go and see how their values compare to what we've put in, and potentially shift their donation if they, you know, have different values. But I think a type of information that would be really useful is to be able to ask the beneficiaries of these programs how they would trade off between these outcomes. Unfortunately, very little research of that kind has been done from what we can tell. So, you know, we don't actually ask the beneficiary population, or research hasn't before, you know, how they think about these trade-offs. So we're exploring some initial research in that area with ID Insight, the group that Catherine was talking about. And there's a couple ways you could do this. You know, one sort of methodology is a revealed preference methodology where, you know, in the U.S., basically they'll look at two people who take similar kinds of jobs. One has a slightly higher mortality risk than another, and they see basically how much more someone needs to be paid in order to take a slightly greater risk of mortality, which might get you a sense of how much they value health versus income. And so that would need to be adapted for a developing country setting. That hasn't really been done before, but we're trying to explore what might be possible. And then second is a stated preference design where you just try to explicitly ask people these questions, you know, how much do you value this outcome versus that one? And, you know, these are very sensitive questions, and it's hard to, I think it will be hard to interpret the results without getting a lot of information from people who we're asking the questions to. So we're kind of in the early stages of exploring what this research might look like so that it can help us better allocate the donations that that we're looking at. So that's what I have on GiveWell Incubation Grants research work. So just to sum up a little bit on GiveWell Incubation Grants, I think a long-term vision that's exciting to us is that potentially if you have a great idea for helping the world's poor, that GiveWell could make sure that you get funding to test that idea. So, you know, take it from the idea to the actual organization stage, that you would have funding to monitor it well and see whether you're actually delivering the program well, and then have funding to test it via randomized control trial and see whether it's actually having the impacts that you're expecting in a rigorous way. And if all of that goes well, then you could be recommended as a top charity later on and get a lot of funding to scale up your program. So we have, I think, the potential, if all this goes well, to improve the incentives in the space so that, you know, anyone who really has a great idea and wants to test it can get funding and do that. And if it succeeds, then really be able to scale. So that's the GiveWell Incubation Grants work. Now I want to shift gears to another major GiveWell research priority, which we call intervention prioritization, which is basically looking at the evidence base for programs. So GiveWell, when we are doing our research, you know, there's a gigantic universe of potential programs that we could look at. But the first step in our process is usually to review the evidence base for those programs. And so we're usually looking at, you know, are there rigorous trials? If there are, what does that imply about the cost effectiveness of the program? And the reason that we start here, rather than talking to charities, is that first we tried to get this information from charities in the past, but often they didn't have it because it's very expensive and difficult to run a rigorous trial to look at something like whether or not bed nets reduces child mortality. And so charities didn't have this information. And then secondly, the reason that we start with this rather than talking to charities is that we found that the program that a charity works on is the strongest predictor of our ultimate view of that charity's cost effectiveness. So just for example, you know, GiveDirectly is one of our recommended charities. We think they're one of the strongest organizations that we've ever seen. They do incredible monitoring. They are very transparent. But nevertheless, we recommended that donors allocate to bed nets and deworming above giving to them because the programs that those other charities ran, you know, just paying for deworming pills rather than giving direct cash transfers, we believed was a more cost-effective way to help people. And so even if an organization were less efficient but were running something like a deworming program, then it'd be more cost-effective than an extremely strong organization running a different program. So for that reason, we try to evaluate the effectiveness and cost-effectiveness of programs before looking for charities. And there are a large number of programs that we haven't investigated in many years or haven't investigated at all. So a major priority of GiveWell right now is to look at the evidence base for those other programs. And so just to give some examples of areas that we're looking into, areas with major health burdens such as HIV and TB, family planning programs, education, and I kind of put these programs into two different buckets. So one is relatively similar to what GiveWell has done in the past of looking at programs that are kind of paying to deliver a concrete good to someone and hoping that that will affect their lives. And a second kind of bucket, which is more challenging to evaluate, is policy work, which, you know, you're trying to influence a government body or it's I think it's less clear how to draw the direct link between funds and improvements on people's lives, but it also holds potentially very high cost effectiveness. So we think it's valuable to start to look into that area. And just to give, you know, people are probably familiar with tobacco policy. That would be things like tobacco taxation or road safety. But we also have pesticide suicide reduction listed there, which is basically a common way or a common means for committing suicide in certain parts of the world is to consume very toxic pesticides. And there's some evidence from Sri Lanka that if you were to ban some of those most toxic pesticides, you might be able to substantially reduce suicide. So that's one area that we're looking at. And so just a bit of the, you know, how this actually works, how we prioritize among programs. The first thing that we do is just try to understand what the program is, what problem it's trying to address. The second is see whether there's high quality evidence available. Are there randomized control trials that look at that program? And if there are, what do the effects imply about the cost effectiveness of the program? And then, so we do a relatively small amount of work early on to figure out, you know, is this program worth looking at more deeply? And if it is, then we can do more intervention assessment, talk to charities that work in that program, or ask our remaining questions to experts. This work can lead to a variety of outcomes. So it could lead to more top charities. It could lead to incubation grants if we see a particular gap in a program that could be very cost effective, but, you know, another RCT or more monitoring needs to be funded. And so there's a variety of potential outputs. And just to give an example of one area where this has worked and what has come from it, we looked through surgery charities because that's not an area where we had been recommending charities before. We had done some investigation a long time ago, but wanted to revisit it. And so we reviewed, all of the surgical, interventions that someone could do in the developing world, looking at things like cataracts, fistula, cleft lip palate surgery, trachoma surgery, which is a surgery to try to cure blindness, and looked for the evidence on all of those programs and did some cost-effectiveness analysis. And cataracts and fistula surgery emerged as some of the most promising. And so we decided to go and talk to organizations that work on that. We learned that it was, you know, more complex than we realized, that they weren't just paying for surgeries, as Catherine was talking about. They were doing things like mentorship programs with hospitals that may be more difficult to evaluate. And so decided to start our GiveWell Incubation Grants work funding monitoring on those. And so that's one example of how this, you know, reviewing the research leads to other outputs from GiveWell. And just, you know, some more examples. So we did the first round of this work, a small amount of intervention prioritization in 2016, and decided to prioritize SMC, which Catherine already described, and Zusha. And so in the case of SMC, we went out and talked to Malaria Consortium and ultimately recommended them as a top charity because, you know, our initial review suggested that SMC could be a quite cost-effective program and had strong evidence. And then with Zusha, you know, based on our review of the RCTs in Kenya, we thought that was a promising intervention to pursue, and talked to the folks behind Zusha, realized that they wanted some funding to continue that work and also to test it further, and so provided that funding via GiveWell incubation grants. And finally, you know, some of the intervention areas that we're prioritizing in 2017 are the ones listed here: family planning or rehydration solution, pesticide suicide prevention, voluntary medical male circumcision, and antiretroviral therapy. And so we're still relatively early stage on the next level of work here. So we're talking to charities and don't have, you know, very determined or strong views on the effectiveness of these programs yet, but the early work suggested that more work here would be worth it. So that's what I have, that's what we have on the formal presentation, and excited to hear what questions you have.
All right, thank you, Josh and Catherine. Okay, so again, we're going to be taking questions via the Bizabo app, which you've hopefully already downloaded, and just near the bottom of the home screen, you can see polls, and if you click polls, scroll and find Josh and Catherine, and then you can submit questions. It looks like we have a few coming in already. I think you can also, if you don't have the app, go to sf.eaglobal.org/polls. So sf.eaglobal.org/polls, and you should be able to do the same thing there. And just while you guys have a moment to send your questions in, I thought I'd ask one of mine, which is, with this, you know, more work that you're doing on thinking about interventions that maybe have longer term horizons for their effects, do you think at all about, or like, how do you think about kind of intermediary metrics? And, you know, might there be things with this SIGA study? Could you imagine that identifying long-term outcomes that are connected to intermediate outcomes? Could you imagine making recommendations based on intermediate outcomes? Or is it always going to depend on those longer term results?
Yeah, so I think it depends a lot on the particular case. I mean, I think in the case of trying to understand the long-term effect of an intervention, you want to figure out what is leading to that effect. You know, I think that's an important part of thinking, is this even a plausible effect? You know, like to also look at other outcomes, other intermediate outcomes, and say, well, you know, if you had a gigantic increase in income, but there was no actual increase in years of schooling, then, you know, what's going on there? You'd want to see that the story seems to line up, that there was also like increased years of schooling, perhaps increased test scores and that kind of thing. And so, so that'd definitely be an important part of thinking about the long-term effects. I think that if you could determine that there was a really strong link between approximate outcome, like years of schooling, for example, and income in a variety of settings, then perhaps you could start to, you know, look at trials that impact the intermediate outcome rather than the ultimate outcome. But I think we'd want to see kind of an evidence-based link between between the intermediate and the long-term outcomes.
Got it. That makes sense. Great. Okay. So, Rizusha, it seems weird that bus safety in Kenya is a top intervention. Is this because there are a lot of cost-effective interventions, but only a few that we know about?
Yeah. So, I think that one thing that's worth knowing is that I think road safety is quite a different issue in many parts of the developing world than it is in the developed world. So I think it's actually a major cause of disability and death. And I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but you know, it's pretty shockingly high rates of some of these issues. And so basically Zusha, you know, we're thinking about what they could do that might be cost effective, and are one of the first groups that we've seen to rigorously test, you know, a specific intervention to try to affect this problem. And so, you know, they did two randomized control trials on the sticker intervention, and it seemed to be effective, and that's why we want to explore it further. You know, they're doing three more randomized control trials on it, so hopefully we'll really get a strong sense of whether this is, you know, a real effect and is you know, an effective program. But we just haven't seen a lot of other organizations working on road safety interventions where they have strong evidence. And so that's why we started off by prioritizing Zusha. But, you know, we are interested in exploring policy related to road safety and other interventions, and hopefully we'll have more to say on those in the future.
Great. How does GiveWell think about the structure of organizations and, for example, the leverage of social enterprises versus nonprofits?
Yeah, so I think in terms of how GiveWell thinks about the structure, I mean, I think we think about where we can come in as donors. So that's kind of the first question, which is that, you know, what we're doing is directing funding somewhere. So what can we support where funding is the thing that would cause more of the good thing to happen? I think often we hear things like, you know, social enterprise is in some way by default going to be more effective because there is, you know, additional motivations for business profit or for whatever other reason. I don't know that we would take that as necessarily the case by default. And then also that we're really looking for places where funding gaps exist. So for other, you know, types of organizations, they might be, because they're a business, you know, getting funding from other sources, whereas, you know, we're identifying gaps where donors can come in, you know, as charitable donors and provide dollars to cause more of a good thing to happen.
Let's see, so many questions. Yeah, so you talked, Josh, you talked a little about measuring the effectiveness of policy-related interventions, and could you talk a little bit more about how you would, how GiveWell would think about that at all?
Sure. Yeah, so we haven't done, you know, deep investigations on policy programs that we've published yet. So, and we haven't kind of taken something to its conclusion, and I think we'll have more to say then, but I can offer some initial thoughts. So I think that, you know, one thing that we're trying to do when we're thinking about the effectiveness of something like tobacco taxation or pesticide suicide prevention and an organization that's working on that is, what is their track record? You know, have they tried this program in certain places, and has that actually led to change? So in the example of tobacco taxation, there's a large number of groups working on this cause, and we've been asking people, what are the biggest success stories of nonprofits actually leading to tobacco taxation change? And so a lot of people point to the Philippines as one example where nonprofits were very effective at getting change. And then I think the question then becomes, you know, what caused the change? Which activities were most necessary that could work elsewhere? And also, when the change was achieved, was that a really cost-effective impact? So, you know, one of our next steps is looking at the case of the Philippines and saying, all right, what was the total amount of donor funding in and that needs to be spent in the future to kind of maintain this tobacco taxation policy change? And when you match that up with the impact on tobacco taxation policy and what that means for people's health, does that seem to be an extremely cost-effective program, just kind of taking all of the dollars in? So it's that kind of set of questions of what's the track record, what's the story for how the impact was achieved, you know, who is most essential, and then does that seem to be cost effective relative to other options?
Great. And how do you determine a unit of utility across the different organizations that GiveWell recommends? So this person has written, it seems years of life saved is a bit easier to quantify, but quality of life adjustments would be more difficult.
Yeah, just broadly, you know, we've mentioned many different types of interventions, so figuring out how we weight them is also part of the subjective value judgments and moral trade-offs that happen as part of GiveWell's, you know, internal process for identifying the cost effectiveness or our best estimate of the cost effectiveness of the things that we recommend. And then in order to compare across the interventions, what we do is that we have an input in our cost effectiveness analysis that lets individuals who are contributing to our cost effectiveness analysis or anyone who comes to our website and wants to download it, make those trade-offs and say, you know, here's how I personally am valuing income relative to, you know, averting the death of a child, and input that figure and then see what that does for the final comparison across organizations. So the actual metric that's in this final page of our cost effectiveness model is the cost per equivalent life saved. And that is just a standardized metric that we use at GiveWell that takes those subjective preferences into account. And I think this is something that's often not well understood about our cost effectiveness analyses, which is that, you know, they do involve individual and subjective and intuitive judgment calls. And so we don't advise taking them literally, even though they are a really important aspect and input into our top charity selection.
And one quick thing I'd add is, you know, one thing that we tried to benchmark off of to some extent, I mean, this is a starting place. It's not necessarily where we end up, but we do look at metrics like the DALI, which try to look at changes in quality of life in addition to just averting death. And they have a complex process for doing that that I'd be happy to talk about afterwards. But basically, you know, they have tried to do that comparison. And so we look at that first and try to understand what went into the reasoning. And then we do a lot of empirical research to understand what are the actual sort of quality of life impacts. And so fistula is one example where, you know, we are trying to understand what are the impacts of that on someone's life. And when a surgery charity is doing this work, are they typically reaching the people who have extremely negative impacts, or what are the different kinds of outcomes that could be achieved? So we're usually doing a lot of empirical analysis in addition to this sort of more philosophical question of how to compare these.
And just to clarify too quickly, the DALI is the disability adjusted life year, which is a commonly used metric in the global health world. And so we don't explicitly use DALIs in our cost effectiveness analysis, but they're an input into how we think about different interventions.
Okay, next question. GiveWell's focus seems to be organizations that are focused on specific interventions for specific diseases. What are your thoughts about global health organizations that offer holistic health solutions, for example, Partners in Health?
Yeah, so I think this is it's a relatively challenging area to evaluate because you're paying for so many different types of programs that have so many different types of potential health outcomes. So because of that, we have tended to focus more on the charities where you can be quite confident that you know, dollars are leading to a specific type of outcome that you can be confident is sort of more cost effective than most options. I think that in the future we'd be open to evaluating an organization that works on, you know, more holistic health interventions. But I think the questions would be around, you know, what are the total costs? What are all the programs you're working on? And then can we estimate the, you know, overall cost effectiveness? So it would just be a really kind of detailed and time-consuming investigation because you need to track down kind of every different thing that they're affecting.
Next question would be, what is the lower limit on funding amount that GiveWell would consider for an incubation grant to run a randomized controlled trial on a new possible intervention?
I don't know what the lower limit would be for just for RCT funding specifically. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think that conceptually there isn't really, you know, you would want to have enough kind of statistical power, you know, you'd want to be reaching enough people that you could actually see an effect of a certain size. So that's probably one major way that you need to have an operation that's at least at a scale where we could, you know, detect an effect. But I don't see any reason why, you know, if there were a really potentially cost-effective intervention, but it were just at a relatively small scale, if you could do a good study of it, I think that's something we'd be open to. So I don't think there's any, you know, sort of hard cutoff aside from practical considerations.
Yeah, I was going to say, my impression is RCTs are really expensive.
Yeah,
so that's going to be the lower limit. All right. How do you plan to increase your capacity to research more areas of intervention?
Well, one is that we just hired a senior fellow who's going to start in September. And she is an econ PhD who will be focused on the intervention prioritization work. So I think that is one way in which we're hoping to significantly increase our capacity for this type of work in the very near future.
Yeah, and we continue to work with, you know, a variety of researchers. I think that we currently have a lot more capacity for research than we've had in recent years. So we are quite focused on executing with our current capacity and think that we're going to be able to cover a lot of ground and do more than we've done in recent years. But we also are, you know, continuing to look for folks and, excited about, you know, senior fellow coming on and continuing to do work there.
Could you elaborate a little on what's changed such that you're now more focused on execution than in previous years or have more capacity for execution?
Sure. So I think that a good number of our staff have been around for a while and so are now kind of trained up and ready to execute on doing a lot of research, which, you know, we had been capacity building for a while. I think that we also just have a larger number of researchers focused on GiveWell than we've had in quite some time. I mean, you know, GiveWell has been around for 10 years, but for a lot of its history was just a few people or, not more than 10 people. And now we have a research team of, I believe, 9, that's more than we've had at many points in the past.
Great. Next question. How does GiveWell interact and coordinate with the rest of the EA community?
Yeah, so we definitely interact from a donor perspective quite a bit with other EA organizations, such as, you know, Charity Science and other groups that are offering opportunities for donors to support top charities and that are actively promoting GiveWell top charities like Effective Altruism Australia. It's really exciting to us that we have so many allies that are telling other people about the groups that we recommend and sort of spreading the word about that. And then informally, you know, many staff are involved with the Effective Altruism community. We have informal relationships with counterparts at Effective Altruism organizations that we're in touch with. So a variety of things. If I missed anything.
Great. I'm not completely sure I understand this next question, but hopefully you will, and you can elaborate. So it says, GiveWell says top charities are evidence-backed, but doesn't initially showcase the, quote, evidence-limited, possibly low/poor monitored space, end quote, mentioned for its number one recommendation against malaria. Does that make sense to you? And then the question is, what is the impact or gain of promoting something given those issues?
Yeah, so I think the question is, we say that our criteria are evidence-backed, but we're kind of raising these limitations of some of the evidence for our top charities. I think that the challenge is that there are always kind of so many questions related to any particular charity's impact. We think that our top charities are outstanding relative to the vast majority of organizations that we've seen in, you know, monitoring their programs, the evidence that their program actually has an impact according to, you know, independent evidence. But nevertheless, we take seriously the fact that a lot of money is being directed to these charities and want to learn all that we can to figure out whether they're being, you know, as effective as they can be. So that's the reason for, trying to better understand whether the Against Malaria Foundation is really delivering bed nets at the level that we think they are, because, you know, if they weren't, that could affect how we allocate across charities. But nevertheless, I think in relative terms, they're, you know, extremely evidence-backed relative to the vast majority of organizations that we've seen. And I think there's always this kind of communications question of how much do you want to raise the limitations? I think that there's a lot of information available on our website, and we don't make it hard to find, what we believe the limitations of these organizations are. But from the perspective of just trying to explain what we do to others, I think that saying that our charities are evidence-backed is a way to distinguish ourselves, because I think that our process really is quite different from a lot of what you'd find.
And just on the specific Against Malaria Foundation monitoring point, I should clarify, it sounds like what I used may have come across as a euphemism, saying that we have open questions, but that is, in fact, what we have. It's not that we learned that AMF was worse at delivering bed nets. What we learned was that we were less confident in the monitoring of the delivering of those bed nets, which I think is sort of an important distinction to keep in mind as well. So what we have questions about is the surveys that are done after the nets are distributed that confirm that they reached the places that they were intending to reach. What we did not learn was something like the nets are not reaching the people that they are intending to reach.
Okay, and one last question. In our final minute, have you had any organizations come to you with interest in becoming more effective? And I guess it's two questions, but whichever one you like. And do you believe your recommended charities list competitively drives organizations to be more transparent and effective?
We definitely have had organizations approach us, even organizations that work outside of the, you know, programs that GiveWell focuses on, just with questions about how we assess charities. And hopefully, I mentioned GiveWell is really interested in transparency. We publish a lot of the you know, all the details of our research on our website, and as well as our process. And so we hope that that information just being out there can be a useful guide for organizations if they're curious about, you know, how we view effectiveness and how we think about evidence and what types of questions we think are important to be able to answer about charities' programs. And then the second piece was
whether you think the existence of GiveWell and its top charities list incentivizes charities to be more transparent and effective.
Yeah, we hope that this is the case, and we increasingly hope that this is the case going forward. We're moving lots of money to the organizations that we recommend. You know, in 2015, which is the year that we have the most recent finalized data for, our top charities received $110 million as a result of our recommendation. At the time, that was, we had four top charities, so it really can be a significant, you know, funding incentive, I think, to engage with the process. And then similarly, what Josh was mentioning with Goals, the incubation grant program, also being to incentivize the creation of new charities and the creation of new evidence-backed charities. We definitely see this as a goal.
Yeah, and I can give one anecdote. You know, one of the incubation grant charities that we worked with told us that thinking through cost effectiveness analysis in the way that we did led them to realize that, you know, actually focusing on delivering a particular type of program might lead them to avert more, you know, child deaths than spending on other parts of their program that were not going to be as effective. So I think that there's some cases where, you know, thinking in this way may have led to greater effectiveness.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll wrap up here. Before we go, so Josh and Catherine are going to be doing office hours in the atrium if you want to talk with them more from 3 till 4. For now, we have a break, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. The schedule has us back here at 3:30, and that will be with Desiree Dudley of the MIT Synthetic Neurobiology Group. So let's thank Josh and Catherine.